8:30 p.m. See Ben Ross, Miss Liberty. 17 jewel ladies watch. $19.75. Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, the air lanes are alive with the questions and answers tossed back and forth at Canada Dry's weekly quiz party. Here's how it goes. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition you receive a complete 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was received first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now, may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please is being broadcast tonight under rather special circumstances. Instead of from the usual National Broadcasting Company studio, we are broadcasting from the ballroom of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, where thousands of delegates from all over the country are attending the New York Herald Tribune's 10th annual forum on current problems. Not that I mean that Information Please is one of their problems, we are simply their guests. The Tribune Forum is one of the outstanding events of the year, and Information Please and Canada Dry are proud and happy to be a part of the proceedings this evening. Otherwise, everything will be as usual. This is an unrehearsed program, as you know. Its four experts tonight are, first, the conductor of the Conning Tower of the New York Post, Mr. Franklin P. Adams, the eminent sports expert and general fount of knowledge, Mr. John Kieran, the learned composer and music critic, Mr. Dean Taylor, and as our extra special guest, one of the great journalists of our country, former executive editor of the Old World, and 2 times winner of the Pulitzer Prize, Mr. Herbert Byard Swope. Now, remember, listeners, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, we'll start with a question which was sent in by a person whose name may possibly surprise you. It was sent in by Mr. Oscar Levant of this city, who will be with us next week. Now, Mr. Levant sent in this question quite legitimately, but if the question should not be answered, we will not pay him $10, nor will we send him a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. However,
he certainly could use it.
You mean the $10 or the Encyclopedia?
The Encyclopedia.
It never was.
Oh, we all could use it, Mr. Adams. But we are sending him $5 for the use of the question to buy his newborn baby a pair of shoes. I don't know whether new shoes cost $5. What do they cost, Mr. Adams?
$5 is nothing for shoes.
Now, here is the question sent in by this new father. What common action, gentlemen, was taken by these literary characters? Charles Strickland, Lewis Dodd, and Walter Craig. What common action was taken by them? Shall I read the names again? Charles Strickland, Lewis Dodd, Walter Craig. I can give you no hint. Mr. Adams.
I can do all I can only guess. They committed suicide.
Well, what makes you say that, Mr. Adams?
Because I know the van.
Well, you do know Levant, Mr. Adams, that's true. But you make the your answer, I'm sorry to say, though a fair guess, is not correct. And you make it a little embarrassing for me to tell you what the answer is. Mr. Taylor, did you have your hand up?
About halfway up. I know who Lewis Dodd was.
Never mind. Just give us the answer to the question, Mr.
Well, I know, in a way, what he did.
Yeah. I've never known anybody to be as precise as you.
His bride died trying to open the window.
Yeah. Suppose I give you the answer, Mr. Taylor.
I think it'd be a good idea.
All right. Charles Strickland in The Moon and Sixpence, Lewis Dodd in The Constant Nymph, and Walter Craig in the play Craig's Wife all walked out on their wives.
I think I was technically right.
Well, that sends $5 to Oscar, but not 10, nor the encyclopedia. And that provides him with at least 2 shoes for 1 baby. It's a very nice question, and I hope his wife is listening. Now, the next question comes to us from Frank L. Holt of Plainfield, New Jersey. This is a somewhat more serious question. Each of the following gentlemen figured prominently in the news some years ago. Who are they, or who were they? Get 2 out of 3. The first is Albert Lowenstein, or Lowenstein. Mr. Scorp.
He was a Belgian capitalist who killed himself by jumping from an airplane.
Yes.
Flying the channel.
That's right. Does anyone know why he did that, Mr. Scorp?
He was supposed to have been hopelessly involved financially.
Yes, well, that was a reasonable supposition. That's quite right. You know when that happened? I haven't the date at my fingertips, as you may have it yourself.
I think it is in the middle 20s.
It sounds as if it would be in the middle 20s, but that was the decade in which those things happened. That's quite right, Mr. Sloan. Now, who was, or is, Dave Barry? Dave Barry. Mr. Curie.
Dave Barry was the, I believe, the long count referee in one of Dempsey's fights.
That's quite right. Which fight was it, Mr. Curie?
Oh, I guess it was the Chicago fight.
Between Dempsey, I beg pardon. That's a nice way of putting it, Mr.
Yeah,
Taylor. Yes,
the Chicago fight between Dempsey and Tunney.
Yes, the second.
The seventh round count that he gave.
That's exactly right, Mr. Curran. When did that take place?
Took place in either 1926 or 27.
27 is right, Mr. Curran, and thank you very much.
There was another Dave Barry.
There was another Dave Barry, Mr. Scorp.
Sergeant at Arms, United States Senate. It was sentenced to bar the Senate for contempt of the Senate.
I see you're going to cause me a lot of trouble this evening.
This is probably my last guest, really.
Well, that gives us an extra Barry, which I hadn't figured on. Thank you very much, Mr. Swope. I'm sure you're right. Now, who was Enoch H. Crowder? Enoch H. Crowder, Mr. Adams.
General Crowder was the man that was the head of the draft business in 1970.
That's exactly right.
Judge Advocate General.
The Judge Advocate General, as you say, Mr. Swope, and that gives us 3 out of 3. Showing that the boys, all of them this evening, have very long memories indeed. Mrs. H.L. Stern of Chicago sends this one in. Name 4 women in literature or fable who suffered tragic consequences because they disobeyed a command. Mr. Kieran, will you start us off?
Bluebeard's wife got into some trouble.
Well, what trouble did she get into?
She was told not to open a closet, and she did.
Yeah.
She got a great fright, but I think Pandora got into a lot of trouble, too.
Pandora. What happened to her?
She had the gift of a box from the gods at her marriage and was told not to open it, and she opened it, and a lot of evil spirits flew out, and she closed it, saving only hope.
Yes, that's very prettily told. That gives us 2. Bluebeard, Bluebeard's wife, Mrs. Bluebeard, and Pandora. Mrs. Quoth.
Lot's wife.
Lot's wife. What happened to her?
Shaved into a pillar of salt.
Changed to a pillar of salt, yes.
And
which at least kept it quiet. Mr. Taylor.
Well, I was going to take Lot's wife.
Sweet of you, Mr. Taylor. But Mrs. Grope had her first. One more. I think that gives us only 3. Mr. Kieran?
The Lady of Shalott.
What was her punishment?
She was supposed not to gaze out upon the world, so she looked at it through a mirror. But I believe Lancelot came caroling down the way one day, and she turned and looked out, and that was the death of her.
That's right. Mr. Swope.
Lucrece.
I beg pardon?
Lucrecia.
Lucrecia, what was her punishment? I don't...
Shakespeare's...
You look it up in Shakespeare? Of course, I could turn on the tap of Mr. Kieran, and we'd have the whole story in no time. But you're quite right, Swope. That gives us 5 women in literature, at least, who suffered tragic consequences because they disobeyed a command. Note how difficult it is to find men who did the same thing. That sends us on to the next question from Mr. William McGann of Washington, D.C. Get 3 out of 4 on this, gentlemen. Name the president who had these campaign managers. The first campaign manager is Will H. Hayes. What president? Mr. Swope.
Warren D'Amelio Harding.
Quite right. Second campaign manager, William Morgan Butler. What president? Mr. Swope again.
John Calvin Coolidge.
Very good, Mr. Swope. Third, Vance McCormick. Mr. Swope, do you make a specialty of campaign managers?
I am one.
Suppose I try Mr. Adams on that one.
Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson. Which of his terms?
I think the first.
The second is right, as Mr. Swope was just about to say. And finally, Hubert Work. Hubert Wirt? Mr. Slope?
Herbert Hoover.
That's quite right, Mr. Slope. Can't get to one of these things. See what we can do with this one. George C. Galt of Chicago, Illinois, sends this one in. The studio pianist is going to play three compositions. Each of them is a serenade. And all you have to tell me after listening for a few seconds to the serenade is who is being serenaded. Is that clear? Before the studio pianist begins, what does the word serenade come from, Mr. Taylor? What is a serenade?
An evening song.
An evening song, as Mr.
Adams is quite right.
Yeah, Mr. Adams is quite right. You boys are working together very well. All right, let's have the first serenade. Thank you. Mr. Taylor.
If memory serves, Marguerite is being serenaded.
In what composition?
In Gounod's opera, Faust.
That's exactly right, Mr. Taylor, 100%. Very good. And now the second serenade, please. Thank you. Mr. Taylor again.
The Evening Star is being serenaded in Wagner's Tannhäuser.
You're pretty good on these serenades, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, there aren't many of them.
You're almost as good as Mr. Slope is on campaign manager.
Well, he takes managers, I take serenades.
That's dividing the work. Now let's have the next and last serenade. Mr. Taylor again.
I believe Manhattan is being serenaded.
What song?
Well, Manhattan Serenade.
It's an idea, but it's incorrect.
It's incorrect.
No, anyone else care to guess? Go on, we have a few more notes of it. Try it again, Mr. Taylor.
Well, if it isn't Manhattan, it might be A Wealthy Widow.
That's right, Mr. Taylor. Whatever gave you that idea?
Oh, just came to me.
Oh, you've got a coy this evening, Mr. Taylor. Serenade to a Wealthy Widow, a popular song, I guess, of some years ago. Who wrote it, Mr. Taylor, do you know?
Wait a minute.
That's not awfully important. I'd like to name the composer, whoever. Reginald Forsyth, I think. Serenade to a Wealthy Widow. Wealthy Widow is a joy forever.
It has no words.
It has no words, no. Now, the next question comes from M. Brooks of Memphis, Tennessee. It's about American history. Get 2 out of 3 on this if you can. What event in American history is associated with each of these drinks? Get 2 out of 3. The first drink is grape juice. Well, call it a drink. Mr. Adams?
Josephus Daniel.
Josephus Daniel. Can you give us the circumstances, Mr. Adams? You're quite right.
He put grog out of the army, out of the Navy.
Out of the Navy, and the sailors were...
He was known as Grape Juice Daniel in most of the papers I worked on.
That's exactly right, Mr. Adams. Thank you. There's still another person, I think, associated with grape juice. Mr. Slope, was Brian ever associated with grape juice in the public mind? I don't know why he is in my mind. But Mr. Adams is perfectly correct. Now, what event in American history would you associate with hard cider? Hard cider. Tough one. Mr. Kerry.
Oh, nobody wants it. There was an election around in the 1840s, I think.
It was 1840. What election was it?
It was the election when Van Buren was running for a second term. It was, wait a minute, Tippecanoe and Tyler Till.
You've got it. And do you know the circumstances, Mr. Kieran, how hard it happened to get into that campaign?
Well, they were putting up the old general as a...
General Harrison.
Yes, a rough, roaring pioneer and sturdy fellow against Martin Van Buren, who was a trifle of an aristocrat, according
right.
to the people who were against him.
There was a Democrat who said of Harrison, give him a bottle of hard cider, a book of moral philosophy, $2,000 a year in a log cabin, and he'll be happy. Which I think is asking for considerable, as a matter of fact. Not bad at all. Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Now, there's one more drink that's associated with an event in our history. The drink is home brew. Home brew. Mr. Cook.
Why not Herbert Hoover, who consistently opposed prohibition at the Republican conventions of 28 and 32?
Well, I think you might put up a case for Mr. Hoover, but I'm thinking of a particular event rather than just a man.
Can you... The Prohibition Amendment and
Well, that's a sensible answer, but it's not the one I was thinking of.
Mr.
Taylor?
Prohibition.
I beg your pardon?
The repeal of the prohibition.
That might be true, too. I was thinking rather of...
The Volstead Act. The Volstead Act.
Well, all of those along the same line, Mr. Kieran. I was thinking of a particular event which got a lot of publicity at the time. Mr. LaGuardia. Mr. Taylor, would you have...
Yes, he defied the government to arrest him for making... Beer in his cellar, didn't he?
That's right. Not his cellar. I think he made it in his office in Washington.
Well, the fact that...
Got to be careful of these things.
The first floor.
Yes, that's right. Mr. LaGuardia, just as an object lesson in how the law was being evaded, prepared some homebrew and was not arrested. And now he's the mayor of New York. There's not much sense in peering into our cash register because so far we have not lost even $1. And while the lucky... experts are rejoicing at their luck. Let's hear from Mr. Milton Cross.
As the days grow shorter, many of our pleasures of the long, warm days are denied us till spring returns. Fortunately, we have one excellent custom that knows no season, the entertainment of pleasant friends. The close companion of these agreeable moments is often a long, cool drink, one of whose ingredients is sparkling Canada Dry water. This bright, lively club soda in a tall drink marks the important difference between mediocrity and excellence. The reason why everyone is always so enthused about sparkling Canada Dry water is that there's no other club soda quite like it. Its millions of tiny bubbles enable Canada Dry to blend more completely, pointing up the true flavor of the drink, making it livelier, more sparkling, and longer lasting. So when you're preparing for the pleasant year-round custom of entertaining, be sure to get in a good supply of the finest club soda of them all, sparkling Canada Dry water.
And my sparkling stopwatch has caught you, Mr. Cross, in precisely 53 seconds. We'll begin the second half of the program this evening with a question from R. Fredericks of Los Angeles, California. Get 3 out of 4 if you can, gentlemen. It's about time I stumped you. With what art is each of these identified? The names are very similar. Edda, Hedda, Nedda, Vedda. I'll spell them. Edda, E-D-D-A. Mr. Adams.
With, I think, Norwegian literature.
Yes, not necessarily Norwegian, but, Old North or Icelandic. Yes. What is an Edda, Mr. Adams?
I don't know. I just know it in crosswords.
Oh, the word has 2 vowels. Mr. Swope?
It's a blood cousin of the saga.
Yes, the old mythological fables of the old Norsemen. Mr. Taylor?
It's Finnish, isn't it?
I beg your pardon?
Aren't the Eddas Finnish?
No, the Eddas are Icelandic. Oh, I don't know what the Finnish epics are called. I don't think they have a special name.
They're Eddies.
I beg your pardon?
Well, the Finnish Eddas called the Kalevala.
Well, that is one epic that is called the Kalevala, yes. Yeah. Between us, we know considerable, Mr. Taylor. How about Hedda, H-E-D-D-A? H-E-D-D-A? Hands, gentlemen? Mr. Taylor.
Oh, the drama.
Yes, what?
The Hedda Gabler by it.
That's quite right. Nedda, N-E-D-D-A. Nedda. Nedda, N-E-D-D-A. Mr. Taylor again.
Opera.
Yes.
Nedda, I don't know what her last name was. It might have been Tompkins.
I doubt it.
She's the heroine of Pagliacci.
Yes, the heroine of Pagliacci and the wife of?
Canio.
Canio, yes. That's exactly right, Mr. Taylor. And the last is Vedder, V-E-D-D-E-R. We have 2 hands. Mr. Swope and Mr. Kieran, I'll throw it to you.
Well, there's a painter named Vedder.
Yes, that's right. Not very many people would know that.
L-U
Vedder. Very good, Mr. Adams, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Swope, and Mr. Kieran.
He illustrated the Rubaiyat.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Taylor?
He drew the illustrations for the Rubaiyat.
That's exactly right. L-U Vedder illustrated the Rubaiyat. That gives us 4 out of 4 on that. What can you do with this one from R.L. Crandall of White Plains, New York? I think I'll ask you to get all of these, 3 out of 3. In what New York newspapers do you find the following printed on the front page? The first, a period... after the name of the paper. In what New York newspaper do you find that? A period after the name of the paper, Mr. Swope.
The Sun.
Not to my knowledge. Are you sure of that, Mr. Swope? Is it the Sun period? I'm not sure. I haven't the Sun with me, but I don't believe that is true. Any other guesses? There are not so many.
New York Herald Tribune.
No, I'm afraid that's wrong.
It used to be in the Tribune.
Make fun.
It was in the New York Tribune period.
Oh, that's a very involved one. No, there is no period after.
Proud of both the Herald Tribune, it lacks a dash or a hyphen. I mean, it has other claims,
too. We'll hear about that. It's the New York Times. The New York Times has a period printed after its name on the front page. That's one wrong. Now, which one has a hyphen in the name of the paper on the front page? Mr. Swope.
World Telegram.
World Telegram. And which one has a picture of six camels on the front page? Well-known New York newspaper. Picture of six camels on the front page. Don't you gentlemen ever look at the front page?
Well, we don't look at the top.
Never the front page written by six camels.
These are six camels. The answer is... And we're very glad to pay this tribute to our
New York Herald Tribune.
Yes, but I threw it at you, Mr. Adams.
No, sir, I remember that.
Did you remember it?
Well, I can't.
It took a long time. Of course, six camels do take a long time.
Also in the New York Tribune. But what are they doing there?
I haven't the slightest idea, Mr. Taylor, but there those six camels
are.
They're
not drinking.
There they're going to stay. Well, that gives us one wrong and sends $10 instead of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of Canada Dry, to Mr. Crandall. Thank you. Mrs. Jeffries Bear of Huntington, Long Island, sends this one in. It's a poetical question. Get two out of three. I'm going to give you three different scrambled quotations. Unscramble them for me. Give me the author and the poem in each case. Here's one quotation. My heart's in the highlands, but it stopped short, never to go again. Unscramble that one. Mr. Kirk.
My heart's in the highlands. My heart is not here. My heart's in the highlands, chasing the deer, chasing the red deer and following the roe. My heart's in the highlands wherever I go.
Attaboy. Who wrote it, Mr.
Kira?
I imagine it's Burns.
Yes, it's Burns. Now, you haven't unscrambled the rest of it for us. So, Mr. Adams.
Grandfather's Clock.
Grandfather's Clock, but it stopped short never to go again. Who wrote Grandfather's Clock, Mr. Adams? Mr. Spoke?
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
As far as I know, it was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. That's the first set of scrambled quotations. Now let's get the next. The Assyrian came down like a wolf on the fold, wagging their tails behind them. Mr. Adams.
The Assyrian came down like a wolf on the fold, and his cohorts were gleaming with purple and gold.
Perfect. Who wrote it, and what's the poem called?
Byron wrote it.
Right.
And it was called The Destruction of Sennacherib.
Very good. And how about the rest of the quotation, Mr. Adams?
Little Bo Peep.
Little Bo Peep, yes. Quite right. Water, water everywhere, turn down an empty glass. Miss Curran.
Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink from the ancient mariner. And the last part is, and when thou too, and when like her, O Saki, thou shalt pass among the guests, star scattered on the grass, and in thy joyous errand reach the spot where I made one, turn down an empty glass. That's the last verse of the Rubaiyat, translation of Fitzgerald.
Mr. Kieran, you're in rare form this evening. Rare form. The next question comes from Ethel V. McKean of Baltimore, Maryland. Now, we have often, I'm sure, seen in the papers, reading accounts of what's happening in the legislative chambers in Washington. A phrase such as, the senators are paired. The senators are paired. What is meant when it is said that senators are paired? Mr. Spoke.
When one voting aye is balanced by a member of his own party or the opposition party who votes nay.
Now what's the purpose of pairing them that way?
So they may be absent from the roll call.
And yet have their vote recorded. That is a perfect explanation of something that puzzles me for many years and I think may have puzzled many other people. Now, when does it take three to make a pair in Congress? When does it take three to make a pair? Mr. Crook.
Under those, I think it only applies to the Senate, doesn't it? Under those conditions where a two-thirds vote is necessary?
That's right. Two would be for and one against, or two
which
would
is necessary in the case of...
Under what circumstances?
A treaty. The passage of the treaty.
Well, when it's attempted to override a presidential veto, yeah. Particularly, or considering a constitutional amendment, then you have to have a two-thirds vote, and you have this threesome pairing... in the Senate. That is a perfect response, Mr. Spoke. How about this next question from J. Harris Melia of Amesbury, Massachusetts. Can you give four popular expressions in which bodies of water are named, but in a figurative sense? For example, oceans of love would be one. Let's have a few more. Mr. Adams.
Go jump in the lake.
Thank you. Mr. Spoke.
Old Man River.
Well, that's not a... I wouldn't call that a figurative expression, exactly. It's the title of a song. Mr. Curran.
I refuse to brook any insults.
That's a dandy. Yeah. Pennywise, pond foolish, Mr. Curran.
Driven to bay.
I beg pardon?
Driven to bay.
Driven to bay, yes. That's a very good one, Mr. Swope. Mr. Taylor.
What do you mean?
I think I'll stop on that one. certainly been nice having you up to this point, Mr. Taylor. The next question from C. Lincoln Christensen of this city. Get 3 out of 4 if you can. In what sport or sports is one leather soled and one rubber soled shoe used? This is a question about shoes used in sports. In what sport is one leather soled and one rubber soled shoe used, Mr. Spoke?
Bowling.
Bowling, that's right. Do you bowl, Mr. Spoke?
Very badly.
On which foot is the leather sole and on which the rubber sole in your case?
Left foot, I think, for the leather sole.
Are you a right-footed or left-footed bowler?
I am whatever makes that answer right.
You're... That's what I call changing feet in mid-program, Mr. Swope. Mr. Kieran?
I think that the most recent ruling on that by the bowling experts is that it's better not to wear rubber on the sole of either shoe. Rubber heels are all right, but it's better not to have a rubber sole on either foot.
Oh, don't spoil Mr. Swope's answer, Mr. Kieran. I'm sure that's true, though. Now, in what sport are no shoes used? Mr. Kieran?
Water polo.
Absolutely. In what sport are high-heeled shoes used? High-heeled shoes? Mr. Taylor?
Bronco busting.
Yes, that's right. Riding. Cowboys use them. In what sport are all metal shoes used? All metal shoes used.
No.
Sure about that, Mr. Kieran?
Deep-sea diving.
All metal shoes? I don't know about that. They do have funny contraptions on them. Might be metal. I don't think they use shoes at all.
In medieval tournaments, metal shoes were worn.
Jousting, Mr. Taylor.
I'm not sure about that. I was thinking just of horseshoes, horseshoe pitching. All metal shoes are used in horseshoe pitching. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4. Now, Mr. Cross, we're waiting to hear from you.
Along about this time every year, we like to direct a special message to the mothers to again remind them to keep plenty of Canada Dry ginger ale on hand, particularly to take care of that after-school rush for the kitchen. You see, Canada Dry is especially suited for these between-meal raids on the refrigerator. The wholesome qualities of real Jamaica ginger are kind to the digestive system, and the aroma of selected spices is always appetizing. Other choice ingredients combined with pure sugar and water filtered many times for purity make Canada Dry ginger ale one of the most wholesome of beverages, frequently recommended for convalescents. And its distinctly different taste appeals to old and young alike. So, mothers, keep plenty of Canada Dry handy. Let the whole family have all they want. It's good for them. Gingivating. The champagne of ginger ale.
The accounting department advises that Canada Dry has lost a total of $10 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Mr. Swope and Mr. Taylor, for playing the question and answer game with us this evening. And our best thanks to the Herald Tribune for making our appearance here this evening possible. Next week, Mr. Levant and Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be joined by the New York Post dramatic critic, Mr. John Mason Brown. Remember, send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Canada Dry wants to call your special attention to National Retail Grocers Week, now being celebrated by the Grocers of America. It's a good time to remember that your local grocer is a good neighbor, anxious to serve, always striving to please. This is Milton Cross saying goodnight to Canada Dry until next week at this same time.